What's up, you beautiful bastards? Hope you have a fantastic Friday. Welcome back to the Philip DeFranco Show. And if you're new here, on Fridays we do things a little bit different. I try to cover more viewer requested stories, stories that I wanted to cover this week, but then because of the sake of time, we didn't get to film it. So with that said, let's just jump into it. And the first thing we're gonna talk about today is something that I feel proves that we are in one of the weirder timelines, and that is because we are getting news about the White House from a reality TV show called Celebrity Big Brother. And this situation revolves around Omarosa Manigault Newman. Most who know about her call her Omarosa. She was on The Apprentice several times, which of course was Donald Trump's reality show. Then during the election, she was involved with Donald Trump again. During the RNC, she said she had been named Director of African American Outreach for their campaign. In December of 2016, she was named as one of 9 people on Donald Trump's transition team. Then in early 2017, she was brought on to be part of Trump's White House staff. And her specific title ended up being Assistant to the President and Director of Communications for the Office of Public Liaison. But that was then, and this is now, and we're living in a post-Omarosa White House. In December of last year, it was announced that she was resigning. There are a lot of reports that said otherwise, but sure. And now we are in February, and Omarosa has now come back to reality TV, but this time on Celebrity Big Brother. It's the first time they're doing it in the States, and Omarosa has already made national headlines. So if you're not familiar with the show, consider yourself lucky. I am, for some reason, addicted to Big Brother. I don't know why. I don't care about these people once the show is over. I'm in there watching the live feeds most season, for some reason. And whoever's in the house is being filmed at all times. There's cameras everywhere. And so this conversation between Omarosa and Ross Matthews gets filmed, and Big Brother then just puts it out. She's talking about her time at the White House, and she says this.
I felt like it was like a call to duty. I felt like I was serving my country, not serving him. Whenever was it accepting a political appointment, it was always about the country. Like, I was haunted by tweets every single day. Like, what is he going to tweet next?
Does anybody say to him, what are you doing?
I mean, I tried to be that person, and then all of the people around him attacked me. It was like, keep her away from me. Don't give her access. Don't let her talk to him. It's not my circus, not my monkeys. You know, I like to say not my problem, but I can't say that because, like, it's bad.
Should we be worried? Don't say that. Because we are worried, but I need you to say no, it's going to be okay.
Okay, no, it's going to not be okay. It's not.
So there were 2 main reactions to this, one being, holy shit, this is terrifying, and the other being, this is just Omarosa putting on a show, she's angry at the White House for kicking her out, she wants people to buy her book, this is just a show. Then, in response to this, and a question about the White House's reaction to what Omarosa said, Deputy Press Secretary Raj Shah said this.
What is the White House's reaction to comments made by former White House aide Omarosa on Celebrity Big Brother, where she said, quote, she is haunted by the president's tweets, she described the situation inside the White House as fat. And said it is not going to be okay.
Not very seriously. Omarosa was fired 3 times on The Apprentice, and this was the 4th time we let her go. She had limited contact with the president while here. She has no contact now.
So one, they're dismissing what she's saying, and 2, now they're being very straightforward in saying that she was fired. And as far as where the situation is right now, because she doesn't have documentation, the people that want to believe it are going to believe it. The people that don't want to believe it, they're not going to. And my personal reaction to this is I don't know what to believe, because the source of this information, the source of this story, is Omarosa. She's a reality TV star veteran that knows how to use the platform. She knew that there were cameras on. Her first jump was to go back into reality television, where cameras were on at all points, where she could whisper things that she wanted to get attention. So this kind of news coming out in a whisper conversation, that's going to have a big impact. Promo and strategy aside, that doesn't mean necessarily that she's lying about what's coming out of her mouth. Now, does that guarantee that everything coming out of her mouth is a lie? No, but it does make me skeptical. But I will say it is kind of funny that she's putting herself in this position now, considering what she said back in 2016, which if you do not remember, I shall read. It's so great our enemies are making themselves clear so that when we get into the White House, we know where we stand. She then alluded to there being a list of enemies, adding, every critic, every detractor will have to bow down to President Trump. It's everyone who's ever doubted Donald, whoever disagreed, whoever challenged him. It's the ultimate revenge to become the most powerful man in the universe. But with that said, I do want to pass the question off to you. What is your takeaway from this whole situation? Lying, telling the truth, I'd love to know your thoughts. But that also wasn't the only story about White House staffers we had in today's news, because there was Rob Porter. Rob Porter is an, as of this week, former senior White House staffer. staffer. Specifically, he was the White House staff secretary, which meant that he was essentially the gatekeeper for the papers on their way to the president. And Porter became an international story this week because his first and second ex-wives came out with stories that he abused them. The first article we saw was from his second ex-wife, Jennifer Willoughby. And interestingly enough, before describing the abuse that she received, she says, "I want to be very clear when I say this. I don't want to be married to him. I would not recommend anyone to date him or marry him. But I definitely want him in the White House in the position he is in. I think his integrity and ability to do his job is impeccable. And the majority of the issues he suffers from are very personal and intimate." But then she goes on to describe his extreme anger, how he was verbally and emotionally abusive, then describing Porter getting more violent. Things aren't working. They get separated. She says he violated the terms of their separation. She files for a protective order against him. There was an instance where he punched through a glass door. In December of 2010, she says Porter assaulted her, saying it happened just after our first anniversary. "I cannot remember what the fight was about, but I excused myself from the fight in a way that was typical at that time. I certainly was not meek and mild and said, 'I'm not going to fight you anymore,' and stormed off and went to take a shower. He was not done fighting with me. It was a glass shower door. He opened it and dragged me by my shoulders out of the shower to yell. Immediately upon seeing my reaction to that, he released me and apologized, but it doesn't take away that he was angry enough that that happened." Also, Porter's first wife in this article is asked for a comment, and she says, "He was verbally, emotionally, and physically abusive, and that is why I left." Now, following this, we see Senator Orrin Hatch, General Kelly, Sarah Huckabee Sanders all speak up for Porter, all supporting him. Kelly saying, "Porter is a man of true integrity and honor, and I can't say enough good things about him. He is a friend, a confidant, and a trusted professional. I am proud to serve alongside him." Sanders saying, "Porter is someone of the highest integrity and exemplary character." Orrin Hatch, who Porter had worked for as chief of staff, saying, "It's incredibly discouraging to see such a vile attack on such a decent man. Shame on any publication that would print this, and shame on the politically motivated, morally bankrupt character assassins that would attempt to sully a man's good name. I've known him for years, both as a close friend and as a personal advisor. He is kind and considerate towards all. The country needs more honest, principled people like Rob Porter, which is why I hope that this cynical campaign to discredit his character ultimately fails." And then the other story comes out. Remember I said that he had a first wife. Colby Holderness gave that small statement for the first article and then separately shared her story. She says, "He was never physical with me while we were dating, and now I see there were red flags left and right." She talks about him being verbally abusive, emotionally abusive, and saying after their marriage in 2003, things escalated. The first incident was during their honeymoon when Porter allegedly kicked her because, quote, "we weren't having sex when he wanted to have sex," adding, "that was the first time he hurt me, and then the doors opened. I didn't do anything, and it continued." And then Holderness describes an escalation in the violence, pushing, digging an elbow into her. Then it escalated to choking. There, she says, "it was not hard enough for me to pass out, but it was scary, humiliating, and dehumanizing." Holderness then describes an incident in Italy where Porter punched her in the face, saying, "we were arguing, and he punched me in the face. He left visible marks when he punched me, and I have pictures of that. I didn't go to the police because I was scared. I was in Italy alone, and I didn't know what to do." Now, following all of this, Porter resigned from his position at the White House and said in a statement, "these outrageous allegations are simply false. I took the photos given to the media nearly 15 years ago, and the reality behind them is nowhere close to what is being described. I have been transparent and truthful about these vile claims, but I will not further engage publicly with a coordinated smear campaign." We also received new quotes from the previously mentioned three who defended him. Sanders saying, "it's not a matter of believe or don't believe. I heard for anyone who's experienced anything like that. I haven't in whatever degree, but at the same time, I can only talk about my personal experience and interaction." Kelly saying, "I was shocked by the new allegations released today against Rob Porter. There is no place for domestic violence in our society. I stand by my previous comments of the Rob Porter that I have come to know since becoming chief of staff and believe every individual deserves the right to defend their reputation." Senator Hatch saying, "I am heartbroken by today's allegations. In every interaction I've had with Rob, he has been courteous, professional, and respectful. My staff loved him and he was a trusted advisor. I do not know the details of Rob's personal life. Domestic violence in any form is abhorrent and unacceptable. I am praying for Rob and those involved." And in the press briefing yesterday, Deputy Press Secretary Raj Shah said, "we all could have done better over the last few hours or last few days in dealing with this situation." Now, what I will say is the most interesting response that we've seen here is probably the one from General Kelly. And the reason I say that is because according to reports, it's very likely that he already knew about these allegations. According to The Intercept, Holderness shared her story and photos with the FBI. This because the FBI was conducting a background check on Porter, which then leads to the report from Politico that the FBI investigation resulted in Porter's inability to receive a security clearance in November, this preventing him from becoming General Kelly's top deputy. Which then brings us to the New York Times, who say they have two White House officials, two sources, who said Porter told White House staff these allegations were made up. And so if all of that reporting was true, it's very interesting to see Kelly's statements kind of change. And so it was just very interesting to see the kind of change of tone based off of information it seems that they already knew becoming public. And so then that, of course, brings up the question, why do they wait to move on this? One of the beliefs around that is it might have something to do with him dating or at least hooking up with Hope Hicks. Hicks, of course, is the White House communications director. She's one of Trump's closest aides. So was he kept on because of his relationship with Hope Hicks? But also, it could be the other thing. Because they are in a relationship, they may have asked her, has he ever done anything close to what is being described in these stories? Maybe she said no, and so they believed him. And as of right now, that's where we are. It'll be interesting to see if more information comes out, if Porter explains his defense. That said, I do want to pass the question off to you. What is your takeaway from this whole story? What do you think about the initial reaction, the reactions after the second story? I'd love to know your thoughts. Also, of course, if you're willing to share, if you're a Trump supporter, you're a Trump hater, you're someone in between. I also like to know that because then I get to see kind of specific reactions. Then we'll talk about one of the more requested stories this week about Doritos. If you did not see, the CEO of PepsiCo, Indra Nooyi, was a guest on Freakonomics Radio last week. And in this interview with the host, Stephen Dubner, we get this back and forth.
I understand that men and women eat chips very differently. Can you tell us the differences?
When you eat out of a flex bag, you know, one of our single serve bags, especially as you watch a lot of the young guys eat the chips, they love their Doritos and, you know, they lick their fingers with great glee. And when they reach the bottom of the bag, they pour the little broken pieces into their mouth. Because they don't want to lose that taste of the flavor and the broken chips in the bottom. Women, I think, would love to do the same, but they don't. They don't like to crunch too loudly in public. And, they don't lick their fingers generously. And they don't like to pour the little broken pieces and the flavor into their mouth.
So is there like a male and female version of chips that you're playing with or no?
It's not a male and female as much as other snacks for women that can be designed and packaged differently. And yes, we are looking at it, and we're getting ready to launch a bunch of them soon. For women, you know, lower crunch, the full taste profile, not have so much of the flavor stick on the fingers. And how can you put it in your purse? Because women love to carry a snack in their purse.
And oh, did the internet have a field day with this one? You had people saying it's stupid, it's a ridiculous idea, it's demeaning to women. You had women rights groups speaking out against this. A spokesperson for the Women's Equality Party saying, companies that perpetuate these tired gender stereotypes will continue to lose out on the single biggest consumer group, women. No doubt some male consumers will welcome the chance to have a bigger package. But the idea of shrinking products for women, no doubt for the same price, is as old as the admin making these decisions. Now, following all of this, when asked about Nooyi's comments on the new chips, a spokesperson for PepsiCo said, the reporting on a specific Doritos product for female consumers is inaccurate. We already have Doritos for women. They're called Doritos, and they're enjoyed by millions of people every day. At the same time, we know needs and preferences continue to evolve, and we're always looking for new ways to engage and delight our consumers. Now, there are a few things that I want to unpack here. One, this wouldn't be the first time we've seen gender marketing and gender-specific products. Well, obviously, you have things that are seemingly more accepted, like razors for women, razors for men, but even there, you have anger and debate around what's called the pink tax, specifically that female products cost more than men's products. For women, we've seen the beer for her, the Bic pen for women, because apparently they need their own. And on the opposite end, you have things like Dr. Pepper 10, which literally said in commercials, not for women. That said, the difference between a Dr. Pepper 10 and a crunchless chip for ladies, it's different. One's like, we're guys, we're big, we're loud, we're crazy, and the other's like, women have a place. Then, as far as the statement of the reporting is inaccurate, no, not really. The reporting is a recording of your CEO saying stuff. Based off of everything that we're seeing here, it looks like you definitely want to launch new products. Your CEO says you're set to launch new products, some that are not necessarily lady chips, but chips that are aimed at all the stuff ladies like. Your CEO says it herself, low crunch, full taste, something that you can, you know, put in your purse. That's a lot of information to have not done research on it, you know, tested it out, it plans to release something. So you wanted to launch chips that were going to be targeted for ladies. The main person that would consume them would be ladies, but you weren't going to call them Lady Doritos. That's it. And to me, that doesn't seem like the biggest deal in the world, especially if they're not labeling it Lady Chip. I mean, think about it. If there is any company that has done the research, run through the trials of what people like to eat, men, women, old, young, it's going to be this company. That said, I get why there was a big reaction. I don't personally have a big reaction to it, but a lot of people just don't like being told, like, they are this thing. They are in this box. They will like this because they are insert thing. But that said, I will pass the question off to you. Do you have the same feeling or different feelings about this story? I know there are a lot of people sounding off on this, so I want to hear what you think. Then I got a lot of requests for this one. News broke that VidCon is being purchased by Viacom. VidCon, of course, one of the largest online video creator conferences. There are now multiple conferences. For those who have been around for a while, you know that it was founded by Hank and John Green. Every year, thousands of people attend. Last year, the one in Anaheim attracted around 30,000 people, including myself. I've been to every single one. And now, after all these years, the news has come out that Viacom has acquired VidCon. Viacom saying in a blog post, in a move that will accelerate its participation and investment in next-generation platforms and expand its focus on live events, Viacom has acquired VidCon, host of the world's largest multi-day conference for the global online community. VidCon, which will remain a standalone entity and retain its senior leadership team, will be able to considerably expand its global reach with the startup spirit that has allowed it to flourish. And this appears to be just part of Viacom's new digital creator push. In November, Viacom launched Viacom Digital Studios. They scooped up Kelly Day to lead this new studio. She was the CBO previously at Awesomeness TV. Also, last month we saw them acquire the influence marketing firm Husei, and so this just seems to be the next step for them. And so this move with VidCon, honestly, from a strategic standpoint, it makes sense. New digital studio with someone leading it that's thrived in the space, a massive marketing team that, once again, understands the space, and now you have access to some of the top creators in the world due to your conferences. So not only would you be able to use VidCon in its current form and the other versions that you create as a promotional tool for your own digital studio, it also gives them a fantastic recruiting tool, get some of the largest creators in the world, thousands of smaller creators right there in front of you to your doorstep. So maybe you can work with them, get them to be a part of your new studio. Once again, that's me looking from the outside in. Now, in a statement around this move, we had Hank Green saying, Viacom has decades of expertise creating incredible live events for fans, and we are building something truly unique by blending that with our team's deep care and passion for the community and culture of online video. Hank also separately made a video where he commented on his past where he was critical of Viacom, but also noting that Viacom has a lot of experience in making fan-first events successful. As far as financial terms of the acquisition, that was not disclosed. And as far as reaction from the community, people seem a little bit split. And it seems like a lot of the people that are excited are people that have a lot of trust in Hank Green and believe that, you know, he wants this to be successful, and so it's going to be a good move. And those who are not necessarily happy about this, it feels to be for a few different reasons. Some saying, you know, VidCon was all about by creators for creators. Now all of a sudden this corporation's coming in, it just seems like a money play. Others not a fan of this just because they don't like Viacom. You might remember for years there was a massive fear that YouTube was going to be shut down by Viacom. This because of a lawsuit where Viacom was seeking $1 billion in damages from YouTube. They ended up settling that case in 2014. And as far as my opinion on this, I'm personally at a point where I'm skeptical, but I'll wait to see what this actually looks like. I already said last year that it might be one of my last years going. Like, for networking purposes, I still might send a few people from the team, but otherwise, what we get for the amount of time we spend there, it's very limited. And when I say that, I mean, like, we don't get paid. And I'm not asking for payment. I just think that I could have a more fulfilling experience for myself and the people that watch me if we do our own events. And I think that's why you're seeing people like Aaron Hansen, Ego Raptor, launching companies like Real Good Touring. A lot of creators want to do in-person things, but they don't have the team to do the actual touring or creating an event for them, so then they go to these things for free and they help other people build stuff up, and what they actually get out of it is pretty limited. And so kind of also on that point, while I am skeptical of Viacom, I'd be very interested to see what new thing, what special thing could they do with VidCon. We'll see. I always hope for the best and expect and plan for the worst. And that's actually where I'm going to end today's show. And remember, if you liked this video, you like what I'm trying to do on this channel, hit that like button. If you're new here, hit that subscribe button. That way you make sure you don't miss these daily weekday videos, which actually, if you did miss yesterday's show, you want to catch up, click or tap right there to watch that. Or if you need something a little bit lighter, I have today's brand new behind the scenes vlog. You can click or tap right there. But that said, of course, as always, my name's Philip DeFranco. You've just been filled in. I love yo faces, and I'll see you next time.